While writing the column that you are currently reading, I have spent countless hours sitting within view of Red Oak Villa and what remains of the old St. Joseph's Hospital. Surrounded by the hustle and bustle of the downtown with the noise of the cars and motorcycles, it is amazing to imagine what it was like when St. Joseph's Hospital dominated the skyline north of Elm Street, perched on Mount St. Joseph. This is a place that contains many memories, both good and bad. Births, deaths, sicknesses and cures, all life-changing in their own ways. Let us now delve into the memories shared with us by you, the readers. The first comment left by the vast majority of readers was that they were born at St. Joseph's. Unfortunately, for the purpose of this column, I can't consider that a memory per se. Sorry. And of course, if that was the only memory sent our way, this column would be rather short. However, I can say for a fact that based on tallying all of those particular comments, plus those left on photos of old St. Joseph's Hospital posted on the Sudbury Then and Now Facebook page, at least 400 people were born there over the years. So, as Roger Brugis commented, rather cheekily, I was born there, but don't remember much having been born at such a young age. Unfortunately, I have never seen the inside of St. Joseph's, even as a newborn, as I was born 5 years too late. But, my imagination of the sights and sounds, the feel, if you will, of the hospital was confirmed by one reader, Jane Gupta Deering, who commented that, every time I watch The Godfather, the hospital scene reminds me of this hospital. A person's memories can also be tied to the other senses that we experience, and I can imagine that the familiar mid-20th century hospital smell would bring some former patients back in time immediately. As reader Mike Dirks recalls, the smell of antiseptic would whomp you right in the face as you walked in the front doors. And, of course, hospitals can definitely be a scary place for many, certain areas specifically. Jeffrey Lee wrote that the area at the back, where the ambulances arrived, was a dark and eerie place. Diane B. Rogers, having worked in the hospital, has many memories of the building. However, the one that sticks out the most was that she hated having to walk past the morgue to go to the cafeteria. Claude Mayu has particular memories of one staff member, not a nurse or a doctor, but a security guard. He states that he remembers back in the late 50s and early 60s, the parking lot security guard would prevent the children from crossing the parking lot on our way to school. Of course, we would dash across and he would catch us. Frequent contributor Chris Darrow shared with us a little-known fact about a decorative feature of the building that did not survive construction at the site. He writes, when major renovations began, workers were moving that statue of St. Joseph holding Jesus from its perch high above the entrance and dropped it. It shattered and was lost. It is not the same statue that appeared in front of the Sudbury General, St. Joseph's. That one is still intact and was moved to the seniors' villa near Laurentian University, where it's now displayed at the front of the building. Unfortunately, as with some 19th-century buildings that may not have been kept structurally sound over time, the ravages of age took hold, and as another prolific contributor at Sudbury Then and Now, Jeffrey Lee, noted, not so eloquently, towards its end, it was a crummy dump. Sudbury Then and Now member Fred Sigurdsson had a very memorable 10th birthday residing at St. Joseph's, as he spent a month and a half in the children's ward there in 1966, with a month and a week of it in isolation. He also remembers that my window had bars on it, made me feel like I was in jail. That very same year, reader Sandy Grant was treated there, the same hospital where she was born, for double pneumonia at 5 years old. She states that her memories are that the doctors and nurses gave me excellent care during her 3 weeks in hospital. These two readers were not the only ones to spend a disproportionate amount of their youth at St. Joseph's. There have been many others who, like reader Robert Flinoff, were there so many times, they called St. Joe's their second home. Unfortunately, as is always the case, not everyone has great memories of their, or their loved ones, hospital visits. Two readers shared similar experiences that their mothers had while at the hospital giving birth to them. Hope Stevenson wrote that when she was born, her mom gave birth to her silently, as the nuns were yelling at other mothers to be quiet, which caused her to be afraid of similar treatment. Susan Russell Hamilton wrote that her mother told her that the nuns were really mean to some women in labor to shut them up. One of our readers, Lynette Burton, commented of her memory of what is now considered an extremely archaic privilege from a bygone era. You could smoke in your room, to which another member added that the doctor and nurse probably would have joined you. I don't know about you, but I can just smell the nicotine wafting off of that memory. Another occurrence that remains solely in that bygone era was shared by Susan Darling, who wrote, "My sister and I were born there. Our parents lived, far away, in Whitefish, and the doctor had, her mom admitted to St. Joseph's 2 weeks before her due date to be induced both times, in case there was not enough time to travel to the city once labor started." Over the years, more than a few former patients became employees of the hospital. Who would have thought? Lynn Scott Gaynor's reminiscences perfectly encapsulate for us the life that these former patients who are now on the other side of the capping ceremony. It is a veritable Coles Notes of mid-20th century Sudbury nursing schooling, if you will. I was born in St. Joseph's, in 1948, and went into nurses training there in 1968, at St. Elizabeth's School of Nursing, graduating in 1970. By then the school had been taken over by Cambrian College. As students we lived in the residence at the back, that large building still in existence to the east of Red Oak, chaperoned by the nuns. In winter we accessed the hospital in our uniforms by walking through the long underground tunnel. Don't forget that tunnel, we'll come back down to it later. Nursing students toiled regularly in the hospital, but the compensation was modest. In the first year there was no money, in the second year we got $4 a month, and in the third year it was $6 a month, just enough for the nylons, was what Janine Larcher LaLonde, a 1954 graduate, told the Sudbury Star in a 2016 interview. In all, at least a dozen former patients commented that at some point after their stay, they returned to the hospital in capacities as differing as nurse, X-ray technician, and switchboard operator, or in Dan Bedard's case, "I worked there in 1969 for 3 days when I turned 16, as a kitchen helper. That was enough for me." Christina Moore was quite enamored with St. Joseph's, as she wrote that she used to love visiting my mom's aunt there. She was a gray nun who worked in the nursery. That same feeling of affection for the hospital and its staff is echoed in a comment by Kuljeet Buttu, who always found the hospital to have very calm environment. A great team of doctors and nurses. Mark Plo, referencing his mother's time at St. Joseph's, reminds us how the working world has changed, insofar as age of commencing, since his mother started her hospital career here, at the age of 12, and was full-time by 14. Working under the leadership of the nuns. Colette Godon Prue also worked there during her youth as a candy striper in 1967. She recalls that it was not at all like today's hospitals. Sharon Maskovich concurs with this assessment, stating that it was very archaic. Florence Nightingale, the 19th-century British pioneer of modern nursing, probably worked in similar settings. Of course, as with the patient experience, the observations of former nurses also differed widely amongst our commenters. Judy Chaperin, who graduated from the Sudbury Regional School of Nursing in 1973 and had her first position as an RN on F floor, men's and women's medical surgical unit, called working at St. Joseph's a great experience, where we gave good patient care. As mentioned in the previous article, St. Joseph's closed its doors for good in 1975. Two of our article responses came from nurses who just caught on at St. Joseph's as it reached its terminus. Shelley Reichai worked on the men's ward when she first graduated from nursing in 1974. It then closed the following year when Laurentian Hospital opened. And Rosanna Chevrier Sweet holds the distinction of being among those who worked the last shift at St. Joseph's, and the first one at the new Laurentian Hospital. Remember those tunnels that Lynn Scott Gaynor mentioned earlier? They re-entered the public's consciousness during a zoning meeting in January 2016, where the expansion of Red Oak Villa, a six-story addition next to the sole remaining wing of the original St. Joseph's Hospital, was up for approval. Councillor Jocelyn Landry Altman expressed to the project backers, Autumnwood, that, there's one thing you didn't talk about, and that's the tunnel that exists between St. Joseph's Hospital and the diocese building. She continued that, there are numerous stories that have come out of that, especially from the nurses that lived in the residence and would use the tunnel to go to the hospital. In fact, at that time two underground passageways still existed. One running to the old boiler plant, with chimney, behind the hospital, and the other, as Councillor Landry Altman stated, to the former nursing school. Not long after this, Landry Altman and members of the city's Heritage Advisory Panel took in a tour of those remaining tunnels. Mark Plow, as a member of that panel, was one of the last people to walk the tunnel, before it was demolished. He elaborated that it was a finely brown, brick tunnel. Once the tunnels were removed and the Red Oak Villa expansion proceeded, only one, unused, portion of the old hospital building remained. The chimney stack of the central heating plant had been in existence near the location of the main library building, predating it in fact, since the late 1920s. It hadn't been used in nearly three decades. On June 7, 2017, the stack was demolished and with it another piece of Sudbury's healthcare history was gone. I would like to end this column with one last memory, a voice from the past, Kyrene Crichton, founder of the Blue Door Soup Kitchen, who passed away in June 2021. She commented on a previous post of a photo of St. Joseph's Hospital at Sudbury then and now, it is now the Red Oak Villa, a lovely retirement home, and I live there. But I was also born here over 95 years ago. My aunt, Dr. Faustina Kelly Cook, practiced medicine here. Lots of history in this old building. Lots of history indeed, and lots of memories too. Well, dear readers, we've completed our rounds and felt the pulse of your memories of this grand institution. Now that visiting hours are over, it's time to bring this month's stroll down memory lane to a close. Thank you to everyone who shared their memories of St. Joseph's Hospital. We'll see you again in 2 weeks with another timely topic. Jason Markin is a writer and history enthusiast in Greater Sudbury. He runs the Coniston Historical Group and the Sudbury Then and Now Facebook page. Memory Lane is made possible by our Community Leaders Program.